But do you have go you were saying?
Yeah, I was actually saying that you came at a time where the civil society, social movements are now questioning whether we should continue to vote for the very same oppressor. Okay. Now they thinking, is it? I mean, you heard him when he says he went to Sweden.
Where?
He went. Yeah, it was Sweden. Sweden.
Sweden. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And he had. I don't know whether it was in the capital city or something. They played the game Mandela, and after playing the game Mandela, they gave the a narrative of what is happening in the country.
Yeah.
And this old woman asked, who's in power? And they said, the ANC is in power. And they say, who votes for the ANC? You guys are voting for the ANC, but you come here to complain.
Yeah.
So there is a new way now of rethinking politics to say, should we continue to vote for the people who kill us, people who don't bring service to us, people who feel that, because Abahlali, in fact, when they were formed in 2009 in Kennedy Road, the ANC went and attacked Abahlali for the very reason that they said we were creating our own authority that was outside of the state. So people were no longer going to rely on the government, because that's what they want to do, make us rely on them. And every time when they canvass for votes, they will go into the informal settlement. They know that they're going to promise us water, they know they're going to promise us electricity and better housing. And for them to get those votes, they need to keep us in these conditions. So in other words, that's what we are saying, we are being impoverished. So any force that is formed outside of the ANC is then attacked physically by the ANC leadership, because we are now enlightening people that they can live without government.
Yeah.
And when we do that, then we are trying to create our own authority within South Africa, where there is laws and constitution. And that's why people were attacked in 2009. Sbu and others had to go into hiding. They were accommodated by students. His house was broke. They broke his house down. His family was targeted and so on. So he was, in a sense of despair. He had nowhere to go, and the entire leadership at that time. So these attacks that have been happening now, where leaders have been targeted and been killed, we have been killed for one, questioning the corruption that's taking place within the government. Two, we are being killed because we are creating an authority and we are removing this dependence from the people. We are saying our people must not only think of government as the only solution, but they can themselves create their own, autonomous structures that is outside of the government, where they can actually create their own gardening, create their own business, bakeries, and so on, and do not live off government. And when they do that, they don't have to vote for the government. And that's the main reason why Abahlali have been under attack in this province.
I got from Sbu's speech yesterday that I really got a sense of why the ANC and the government are threatened by Abahlali.
Oh, yes.
Because essentially you're taking away all of the currency of their power,
mm-hmm.
which is, from their perspective, you're taking their milk.
Oh, yes.
I was really, really interested. Like, I couldn't really put my finger on what the power of Abahlali was until yesterday, when you're here and you see people and you meet people and you understand all the different facets of it. But it must have started somewhere. Mm-hmm. It's a strong organization now and growing.
Yes.
Where did it start for you, and where did it start for Abahlali?
When the movement was formed, in fact, a lot of academics, when they come here, they say, this is Fanon's ideology. Fanon talk about this. This is what Che Guevara spoke about. We didn't know that. Ours was that we were under attack. We were impoverished. And then we decided to go and blockade M3. This is like the biggest road in the city. And we blockaded it for more than 4 hours. And then the police came. And then when the police came, they started, shooting at people, and people resisted, and we went, and there was this, retaliation from the people and everyone. So But now when we sat down in a round table discussing this in the informal settlement in Kennedy Road, was that, you know, there was this whole picture, because no one at the time protested against the ANC, because the ANC was known as this liberator and this person who removed, who fought against the system that was oppressing black people. But when a group of black people come out and say, even this ANC is also doing exactly what the apartheid regime was, and a lot of people started saying, yes, exactly, this is what we see in our communities. A lot of informal settlement around the area in Clear State started joining the struggle, and then the struggle grew from other settlements and saying, we have been quiet because we did not want to fight against the very people who liberated us. But now when you come out as a voice that was coming from the dark and you said this, and we also realized that, you know, this is the life that we are living. So we sat around. So when we started this, there was no academic, there was no one educated. It was just ordinary black people who have had enough of the ANC. And then we then decided, we started something, but at that time we have not given it a name. And then the community, we said, we need to give this thing a name because it has started now. And people started raising their hands. And then one person came out, an old man, and says, but we live in the shacks. Why don't we call ourselves what we are? Hence the name Abahlali baseMjondolo means, which means the residents of the shacks. And that's how the name came about. That's when the ANC started attacking Abahlali, and then we were in, because they felt that this monster was now revealing, a dark voice had come out to actually say what was happening, because all this time we were respecting the ANC and saying that the ANC is a liberator, while at the same time we are still living in deep poverty, others enriching themselves in the process.
Well, it's a powerful, it really resonates with me and some of the stuff. Mm. In Ireland as well, you know, it really resonates about people themselves naming themselves, naming their problems, naming the people who are causing their problems, and naming their solutions, and then moving for them. You know, it's really powerful stuff. I talked briefly with your brother yesterday, and he was saying about your own sort of story as well. Obviously, obviously that has moved you to action. I don't know if you want to say a bit about that.
Yes. Yes. In fact, that's what had happened in our branch. We've lived in this place for more than 20 years. I practically grew up there. My parents were living there. So the shed that I'm living in belonged to my parents. So we've been living there. Now, when my parents have passed on 20 years later, a person and a businessman comes and says, I've bought the land, I want you out. And we say, according to the laws in this country, you can't just evict people without providing them alternative. And this guy will come with armed with his sons, and he will come with shovels, and he will destroy people's sheds physically. And when we went to the police, because he was a high-profile police officer in the province, so when we went to report him to the police would say, will ask you, why are you doing in his, what are you doing in his place? You must move out. And when people don't understand that we've been in this place for more than 20 years, and this guy comes out of the blue and says, I bought the place. So then we even went to the municipality. Municipality, this is what just happened. This guy says we must move out. But we've been living here for 20 years. And the municipality then said, so what's your problem? Because we need to move out. We said, no, 20 years we've been living here. I mean, we are talking about more than 200 families that are living here. So if you were to say people must move, you are talking about more than 1,000 individuals that are going to be destitute, with homeless. Do you not care about that? So no, if you living in people's land in this country, you must move out. You can't just occupy people's land. So that's when we then realized that we were in a very deep, deep trouble. It was December the 18th, so it was closer to Christmas. And we then received a letter. Okay, but prior to that, within this man, you know, will come and force us to pay. He says, no, you can't live on my land free of charge. But he said, what must we pay? These structures we built ourselves. You were not in the picture when we built these things 20 years ago. Now you're coming to tell us we must pay this. And then we started resisting. We talked to the streets in the neighborhood. He would come and disconnect our electricity and, you know, our water and so on. He was just abusive and armed. So there was a time when we decided, no, we will not. So we blockaded the road. We went into his house. He has a big mansion just a few steps from where we live. We destroyed his wall and so on. What happened was he ran away. No. Before that, he fired a shot in the crowd. In fact, the bullet went through me and hit a young man in the thigh. He shot twice, and then he thought he had killed somebody. Because at that time, we were very angry. So angry that we wanted to grab him straight away. Because prior to that, he said he phoned his wife. Asked his wife, I've got a pistol with me, but I don't have bullets. In front of us. Please, can you get those for me immediately? By the way, the wife is also a station commissioner. He's also a police, a high-profile officer. So the wife came. You know, when you are in a crowd, angry, you've had the conversation with the wife. We did not realize that he was actually going to do it. Only when we heard the fire shots, and then we realized this guy meant business. But to my surprise, the crowd did not move anywhere. All we saw this young man falling down next to us. And that even fueled us even more now. We went straight to him, to his house. He had to physically run and call the other police, and they took him. And that was the last time we saw him. The next thing we heard was him evicting us through the courts now. And that's when we then used the movement to tackle him. We had the best lawyers, and up until today we are still living there. But he now knows what we're capable of.
And your brother was saying, in terms of tactics and stuff, one of the things within the courts has basically just cost him a lot of money. Is that right? It's cost him more than it's worth.
Yeah, and then he comes and he says to the court, the lawyer says, my client is running out of cash and we can't. And we were using pro bono lawyers through Vashali.
Yeah.
So, and then we were like, who's the victim? Who? We didn't want to come to court in the first place. You convinced you. You initiated us in this whole thing. So now it's a problem for you.
And then just on that, so I got a bit of a sense of the tactics that are being used. But what would you say are the principles that define Abu Hilali?
Before I get to that, what had happened now in this community is that where I live is that we have been recognized by the municipality.
Right.
We have ablution toilets. We now in the process of putting electricity in this guy's place. But now he's the one now actually preventing it from happening, because he says the place in paper still belongs to me. But we are now forcing the municipality to expropriate the land and develop us in that particular place. Those are some of the discussions. Now the municipality, to my surprise, the very people who said, hey, you are living in somebody's property, you need to move out, are the ones that are saying now, hey, this guy, he wasn't supposed to have done this in the place. How can you buy a land when people are already living in it? We're like, but you guys pay something. That's what I told you.
But that's powerful. That is powerful, to flip the narrative on its head. And so just to be 100%, is everyone still there?
Everyone is still there.
All the families?
All the families are still there. In fact,
and conditions are better?
They're much better. Much better. There's no threats. The community is united. And I'm going to speak about the principles of Ubuhlalism. That's our ideology. We call it Ubuhlalism. It comes from residence. And maybe if you're going to look at it in English, you would say residentism. How is that the core value? It's similar to socialism, but it's deeper than socialism. It's knowing what your neighbor. It's knowing that you can't go and have a full meal when the child next door is not goes to sleep without food. Ubuhlalism is we speak about the living politics. We are not speaking about the politics that's in general, that the ANC is speaking about now, right now, who they're going to put as a candidate, who's going to be the country's president and so on. No, we are speaking, we are saying our lives matter now. We need water, we need electricity, we need better housing. That's what we are speaking about. Anything else, whether you are ANC, that's why one of the things that we say in the movement, when you come in the movement and join the movement, you, whether you are IFP, whether you are NFP, whether you are DA or ANC, to us it doesn't matter. What matters is that we come together, leaving all these political parties aside when you come in this house, to discuss how are we going to go out of the situation that we are living in, that we do not have water, that we do not have electricity, that we do not have proper housing, that our lives, we are being impoverished, we are living like pigs in the mud in the informal settlements. Young children are dying because they are being eaten by rats. Young people are being electrocuted by these connections that we make because electricity is not provided by us. After all, it's our life that needs electricity, not us. That's the politics that we need. It's our lives. Our lives need electricity. That's why we connect electricity. And we know, and sometimes we do say this, that the reason why these services are not provided to us is because the government wants to keep us poor, so that every time they look for votes, they go and ask for going the informal settlement. By the way, government does not go to the suburbs because they don't know what to promise the people. So we are being used for the government to stay in power. By doing so, they keep us impoverished, so that there's reason for them to come over and over again, make the same promises over and over again. So our core principle is that of ubuhlalism, that we must know that a human being, that before you see a race, before you see that person belongs to a certain tribe, but you must identify the humanity in that person. That's what comes first. Whether it's that's why we took a stronghold during the xenophobia attacks, because these were our people in the informal settlement who actually were instigated to attack foreigners, because this is purposely done by the ANC-led government. That's what the xenophobia came about. It came as a result of the ANC trying to make the people in this country to think that those who are coming outside are the ones that are taking over the economy. Those are the ones who are taking over their jobs. Those are the ones who accept any form of wage as a result of employment, and therefore taking away the rights of people to work in this country. And then we took a stronghold, as we said. These are our black brothers. The fact that you need a passport to go in another African country, for us is we think it's useless, because we are going to another part of our place in Africa. So that's why we say a human being is a human being wherever and whenever they find themselves. Wherever you are, you must realize that you are a human being. There's nothing difference between me and you. We are all human beings. We are created as human beings by God. It's the system on this earth, by clever people, by people who think that they can create and divide us. And that's what we need to realize as human beings, that we have been divided by people who think that they are clever than us, and to make others realize that they are whites and therefore they are better than others. But we are all human beings, and we must realize that beyond the race, there is humanity in every individual.
That's explained it well. All of those things resonate with what's happening in Ireland, what's happening in Europe, where all of the white wealth of the world is controlled, and all of the problems of colonialism emerged from, and now our leaders like our leaders in government, not my leaders, but the leaders of Europe are building walls and blockades and whatever to stop people coming in, and at the same time, there are no borders at all to the money and the wealth that is being stolen. You know what I mean? That's moving, no problem. But they're also selling messages to poor people that your problem is that guy. He came and he took your stuff, not me. And that's right throughout the press, right throughout politics, right throughout the whole thing. So it's really powerful to hear how you're developing solidarity. In that respect, it's amazing. Yesterday at the thing, I had the privilege to be sitting with your leadership,
yes,
on the at the top, and I was wondering how you work structuring, like how do you agree that Tupelo can speak today or Spoo's in charge as the how do you work those structures, how do you structure the organization and elect people and select leaders and make decisions and that type of thing?
No, we have a, I mean, it starts from the local structures. We have structures at branch level. At the branch level, you will have the chairperson, the deputy chair, the secretary, the deputy, and so on. But there will be 7 of them. But depending on the skills within the community, then they can add other members up until the 15. We have a committee of 15 people within each branch. And then we have a provincial structure. The provincial chairperson was speaking yesterday. And then that is actually elected by these branches within the province of KwaZulu-Natal. And then you will have the national structure where you have the Johannesburg, the Cape Town coming to South Africa, I mean to Durban, for a conference where they elect the National Council, of which I served. So I was a chairperson of the branch when the branch joined the movement. And then I was then elected into as an additional member to the provincial structure of the province in KwaZulu-Natal before I became the general secretary of the movement at higher level. So that's how we are structured. But having said that, this is just a formality. There is no one that is bigger than anyone else. This is just merely to say accountability and somebody to respond into this. This particular individual, that general secretary, needs to respond to certain things that are taking place and so on and take ownership. But our structure, in fact, is flat. We don't say the president has the final words or anyone has the final word. We discuss things and we take it to the masses. That's why we have this Monday General Assembly. They are held from January to December. So that's how we keep in touch with our people. People share struggles within their communities and things that are happening within their communities. And then we sit down here and in most cases, we don't have the solutions. Well, of course, in difficult times, we're the ones who go and seek international solidarity and elsewhere when the community now is under attack. But in most times, the communities are the ones who initiate things. For instance, the brother who was a leader who was shot, it was the communities who said, we want to bury our own comrades. We will put anything that we have in our communities together so that we take it, so that we buy things that are needed to lay our comrade to rest. So, and then this is a core principle of Ubuhlalism, that your problem must not be your problem alone. It must also be my problem as well. So it goes beyond socialism because it says whatever affects you personally must affect me personally as well. I must worry whether you have had anything to eat today. I must worry if you are under attack, if there are people under attack. For instance, I at one stage I was, hunted. People wanted me to find out from me. But I didn't know that I was gonna be attacked. So I received a call from one of the community members. It says there were people who were looking for your number. But I did not want to give them because they were armed, first and foremost. Do you know anyone who looked this way and this way? I said, no. And then the community converged. When I came back at home, they were all packed up in a hall, community hall. And one of the things that they said, you need to actually move out because we can't afford to lose you. We have a feeling that there are people who are looking for you, who are hunting you. Until we discover who are these people are, then we only then we can call you. So the police were there, the police were informed and so on. So that on its own was what meant that I'm protected. No one can, people would, if you ask for where my shack is, people will worry. Let me call this guy first before you can even go there, because I need to know if he knows you or not. So that's the protection and the unity that we have within our communities.
And I got, I have about 10,000 questions here to Pelo. Okay, so we'll maybe not get through all 10,000.
But we can do others while we go.
I mean, just some of the things that jumped out at me with yesterday as well. It's clear that you're being very, very effective because you're getting a response and a very violent response too. So that's clear that you're being effective. Right. But you're obviously now also struggling with how to deal with those attacks on you. How do you make decisions around those things? How do you make decisions around how to protect your own community? How to take action that might put people at risk? And obviously, how do those things happen? And I'm sure they're struggles. They're struggles,
Look, if I have to say this because. Sometimes as leadership, we feel that our leaders are at risk, and sometimes we feel there's nothing we can do because the people who are killing us have resources. Anything that you can think of. I mean, you can be in a protest and be killed by a police officer, and it would look like it was just a police officer who was controlling the crowd, whereas that particular person was intentionally doing it. So the people who are killing Abahlali are not hired hitmen alone. Are people within the police force, people within the security force. So you think when you look at it, you will think that this person was accidentally shot by a police officer, whereas in fact this police officer was hired by somebody to come and kill this particular individual. So these are some of the things. People come in your police uniform and knock at your door and you are no longer going to be seen. And you sometimes the police that do that are known. The case that we are going to, I don't know whether it's today or tomorrow, because we have two cases in Cato Manor. We've got a case of a woman who was arrested for public violence. And I don't know whether you call it a public violence when you are in a house and the police want to move you and then you start fighting with them. I don't know whether they call that public violence. And then we have a case of people who were identified in the struggle in Cato Manor. And these people were just coming from work and they were arrested. And when they asked, up until today, I still have to discover what was the charge, because I still don't have the charge. And they don't know what the charge is because they were coming from where. They were just told, you troublemakers, and they were put in the van and they go. And at that time, they were not doing anything. They were not even convening a meeting and so on. So they were abused in the police station by the police, beaten up. Their photos were taken and published all over the newspapers to say these are troublemakers that are stealing land and so on. So the oppression to Abahlali is in such an extent that even the media is turning a blind eye on us. That's why we have our own statement that we release and speak, because the media has clearly failed us. You'll find that people would ask you, what's your problem with the ANC? that's the media. They will ask you that question. So we know very well that the story of our comrade being killed was not published. It was not something very important to them that the ANC has killed one of ours. But they will definitely publish anything that speaks to the ANC being killed. So these are some of the things that we have in this country. So our oppression is not only from the states and the police, but it's also from the media itself. One of the journalists was very open to me at one stage and says, "I'm not gonna write anything up on Abahlali anymore because we are getting in trouble with our editors because our editors are being instructed by government to not write anything." So you see this control of the media by the ruling party to actually give this good picture about South Africa. When I was in Gambia in the African Commission, I was supposed to give a speech, because what happened was the South African embassy that was attending the commission was actually monitoring all civil society. "What are you going to say? Can I have your speech before you speak?" And so on. So what had happened was I then decided to go through Swaziland. I registered as an organization from Swaziland. It's a Lawyers for Human Rights in Swaziland. But I had a South African speech about Abahlali's oppression in this particular city. So when I stood there and then first and foremost the ambassador from South Africa was very surprised, because then when they called out my name, they called the name of the organization from Swaziland and they called my name. And this guy, he says he was surprised if there is any Tapelo in Swaziland. And then when I took the stage and I started, saying the oppression that's taking place in South Africa, they were very surprised, because they were monitoring whatever is happening to South Africa, and they wanted us to say good things about South Africa. And I started, so I was called one side by former ministers and of South Africa and members of the commission to say, "Why did I not tell them before I go and deliver the speech on that side?"
What did you say?
But the speech is
because you would have pulled me off the stage.
Yeah. So the speech that I had was speaking about the question of land in South Africa and how black people still live as foreigners in their own country, in the democratic South Africa that we all think that the liberation ANC has liberated us from it. So that was like, is that so? And then there was a huge debate after that, that South Africa pretends to be this, human rights activist in all of the countries. They respect human rights and so on. So there's still an investigation now also. Is it really true that what I was saying?
Yeah.
So now I'm trying to convince them. I've provoked it now. And well, the organization in Swaziland was also, is also getting in trouble, because in Swaziland they have got their own issue, and South Africa is actually supporting Swaziland.
Yeah.
So if I use Swaziland to just go there, so. But with me, I feel that it came to a stage now where I don't think my life is more in danger now, because they know if anything happens to me, the international world will.
Well, that's one thing I wanted to ask you.
And then that's what makes it strong. As you can see, when Abahlali were under attacks, there were marches in Budapest, London, all over the world.
Yeah.
So those things actually name and shame South Africa. And South Africa don't want to be in that spotlight, because we want to be known as the Mandela country that fought against a system that was unjust, and therefore this one is better. So when these things are spread all over the world and so on, they may try and rubbish it within South Africa, but when they go out, it's difficult for them. And that's who has been our strong and a sense of security that we have. As we speak now, there's going to be answers. They need to provide answers as to why our comrade was killed in the way that he has been killed, and so on. So I think that's where we are most strong. The unity that we have within our community, as well as the international solidarity that we get from friends abroad who condemn whatever is taking place in South Africa, all the attacks that have been directed to us by the ANC government.
Just as a very practical thing then, you know, I've told you a bit about some of the struggles we're involved in, mm-hmm. Struggles for housing rights, mm-hmm. Within a sectarian, divided society, you know, mm-hmm. power is linked to housing. The same in Ireland as it is here, you know, mm-hmm. people are kept out of housing so that certain people can stay in power. But also the language stuff, and I know you speak Zulu here, mm-hmm. speak Xhosa in Cape Town, yes. and language seems to be a powerful, I mean, speaking in your own language, speaking in your own tongue and all that seems to be very strong too. But for us in Ireland, and yesterday you gave me the privilege and let me take the photo, the Achtanish, it's a... Yes. like a youth movement are struggling for language rights in respect of Gaelic. But for us in Ireland, what could we do practically? Because you've been of a great help to me, a great help for this learning, mm-hmm. and you've opened your doors and brought me to your office and brought me to what could we do practically in Ireland in any of those struggles to support you? If you can't think of it right now,
tomorrow or the next day,
but what would you like?
I think... some people think that solidarity is in a form of finance or anything. But for us, I think you guys, I mean, we have an embassy in Ireland. We have, if you've been to South Africa, if the ambassador of South Africa says that there is freedom in South Africa, you need to question it. What freedom are these people talking about? I think by going out and making our voice even more louder than it is now in Ireland, in all of Europe, and rubbish this thing that they call freedom, because we have what is called Unfreedom Day. And I know you've been to Khayelitsha. You've been into the informal settlement. I wish you could get time to go and see people who are as old as 80 years but still living under these shameful conditions. People who have been on the waiting list for more than 20 years waiting for housing from the states. So what freedom are they talking about? Because I may have said what I've said to the African Commission, but I know very well that the Commission is funded by the ANC, and the Commission will not hold the ANC government into account for what is happening in Abahlali basemjondolo. But I think for us, it's the voice, it's the solidarity, it's the constant naming and shaming of individuals that are abusing and killing our people within this country, and that's even more powerful than any form of solidarity that the international world can do. You media statement that you release from there, what you have seen in South Africa, what you have heard from South Africans says, what is happening currently to Abahlali basemjondolo, and that's us is more powerful than any other form of solidarity, whether finance or anything. But I think going out there and naming and shaming, because remember, we have a country that has a budget that can accommodate each and every one of us. During the World Cup, one of the stadiums in the city cost about 3 billion rands. The president of the country used 250 million to renovate his house. So it means that the country has so much, because we are only 58 million people in this country. So it means that this country can they can afford to provide jobs for each and every one of us. But because of the greedy of individuals and the fact that we need to be kept under these conditions so that we continue to vote for the ANC, so that we are kept promised the same promises all the time. They will continue to do that. They will continue to keep us in informal settlements. They will continue to keep us under these conditions so that we continue to vote for them in power. So that's the status quo has been kept as is because we need to keep the ANC government in power. And we are being impoverished, we are not poor. The country has enough resources to provide to each and every one of us. But because they need our votes to be in power and enrich themselves and their families, and corruption continues in this country. And it doesn't matter who, as the president was saying yesterday, it doesn't matter who goes into power, whether it's Cyril Ramaphosa, Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, it is still the same political parts. And if we want change in this country, it can't be business as usual. We need to rethink our politics.
That's powerful, man. Thank you very much. If you have anything else to say, go for it. But that's powerful.
No, I think we should go to court and meet the comrades.
Okay. Well, Goromila Mahagut, that's... Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Irish.
We hope that the solidarity will continue and you will give reflection of what is happening in South Africa.
That's definite. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me just